Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Seer podcast. We are back by popular demand because we've been away for a few days. Don't know if that's true or not.
No, it's not. We're back on a Wednesday because we were going to do Monday and then I had a work thing happened and then we couldn't, so we're doing it on Wednesday. That's why we're doing it today. So I would say we are efficient, if anything.
And we didn't do a reaction this week as well, so we haven't spoken about the Luton game, and all it seems yonks ago. We'll just do maybe like 5 minutes on it and brush over it. But there's loads of stuff to go over, isn't there? The international break always gives us a chance just to look at the wider season, maybe look at the fixtures we've got left, look at the share split changing, for which one of our guests' presence will. is required.
Is it Mick, is it?
And other stuff. Yeah, Mickey loves saying he's going to talk all about Juan Satori and Stuart Donald and give us some real insight onto that. Looking forward to doing that, Mick.
Yeah, well, my C and GCSE maths is finally coming to good use.
Did you get a C first time round or did you have to reset it?
First time round.
No, I get you. What did you get, Chris? Were you going to a star, did you? Chris Webspoon, who's joining us also.
Hi. I actually didn't get an A star. I got an A, but I could give you a very nerdy caveat if you want.
Who doesn't love a nerdy caveat?
I did a year early.
That's the title of the pod, sorry.
I did a year early. So actually,
my God,
jokes on me because I didn't get an A star in it. I missed out on one of my uni choices. So that was good, wasn't it?
Did Sunderland knock you back, did they?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But you should know, I'll be in the records of like people barred from the premises.
Which uni did you try to go to? One of the Oxbridge ones?
I had an interview at Oxford. And obviously I'm not wanted down there by anyone.
Wait a minute. This is is this just legacy?
His bitterness is coming to the fore now.
As soon as I heard they were from there, I'm like, nah, I'm not having this.
Was one of them on the panel?
I think that's afforded them far too much intelligence. It wasn't a business degree, you know, which obviously one of them knows all about. But yes, anyway, how have we got onto this?
Well, don't know, why not? Just
better than talking about the Luton game, which was...
That is true.
Well, I want to say this, right? You know, like me and Mick bumped into each other outside the ground after the match and had a right, sort of enthusiastic discussion about it, didn't we, Mick? I actually thought the game was all right. I know I'm in the really small minority when I say that, but I'm not saying, you know, I'm not suggesting the quality was great, but I didn't think it was a bad game. I think working with what we have at the moment against this team who are really have been sitting the playoffs for the majority of the season, I think we were the better team, and I think we played all right, personally. Back me up, Mick.
No, I think you're right. I think, especially what you said there, the context is important because we've named an unchanged side on Wednesday night and on Saturday, and I think that's a hell of a lot of football to play against three like quality opponents in the Championship. And I think we still looked really well, and I think that's twice now in the space of a few days where we went a goal down, but we responded really well and didn't fold because... That was my worry after the Stoke game. I was thinking, well, have we shown like a real fragility here? But we kept going and we got ourselves back in the game, whether it was a penalty or not, up for debate. But now I think it maybe wasn't a brilliant game in terms of a spectacle, but I think from a Sunderland performance viewpoint, I think we competed really well and I think we got a deserved draw. We were the only team trying to win it from when we scored at the end of the game. So I was quite encouraged, to be honest.
I think, and I remember what they had. So they had one shot in the first half where the lads sort of done well against himself in a position, but he's kind of overrun it and sliced it wide. I remember that one. A couple of minutes before we conceded, Patterson made that excellent save low to his left-hand corner. And then the goal, I can't, unless I'm missing something, I can't remember anything else from them, really.
I didn't think we played badly. I just thought it was a very dull game. It was just one of those, I don't know, it just didn't, for us, it kind of felt like one of those games where you're kind of just marking time until the end of the season, which is a bit weird because obviously for them, they're right in the playoff mix. I thought we played fine. I was just very bored, to be honest. And yeah, like it's an okay result. I think all the things that we knew we had issues with were like apparent again, mainly up front. I thought in midfield we looked better than we had in certain games recently. I thought defensively we looked all right. It was just a bit of a nothing game. It was, the quality of it was really poor. I would say it's arguably the poorest quality game we've had this season. Like if that game was in League One, I don't think anyone really is overly surprised.
I think two
teams cancel each other out.
You know what you're going to get with them when they kick off the game and roll the ball back to their goalkeeper to hang the ball in the air. That is, yeah. You know, and they did that, you know, after we scored as well. So it's obviously something they do all the time. You think, right, 5 seconds into the game here, and we know what we're going to get from this team anyway. But actually, again, it just highlights how the league's just not all that this season. And it's just, you know, you can't help but think it's a missed opportunity. That I think that Tom Lockyer for them was good.
I think that's one of the reasons the game was a bit, like, you were kind of a little bit frustrated in the game. Like I said, the game wasn't high on quality, but then you were like, yeah, these are above us, but they're really not any great. Like, don't get me wrong, I think, like, for the historic size of a club like Luton and the stuff they're doing down there, I think they're really well run and I think they're doing really well. But, like, yeah, I agree. Like, I think from our perspective, you kind of look at it and you think, you know, yeah, the league isn't that great this season. So it just feels like it's kind of petering out a bit when really there was a bit of momentum going in the end of January, and since then it's kind of all tailed off. What's up? 1 in 7?
Yeah, it has. And we'll get on that when we look at the wider discussion. And I don't want to be too, you know, I kind of feel like we've, you know, everybody knows our stance on it, don't they? And just looking at the game in isolation, I think, really, to just try and like raise spirits. For me, you know, it's encouraging that we aren't far away from being a team and compete. Of course, who's in the division next season is going to impact on that again, which we can look at a little bit later. What do we think for the goal, for their goalkeeper fault?
I thought he was at the match, but I sit at the other end and the angle that I sat at, the number of deflections, because I think it was a couple, wasn't it? Wasn't really that apparent. I think, having seen it back, I think it's one of those that, like, it makes the keeper look bad, but really in real time, and the ball's bouncing around, I think it's a difficult one to blame him too much for.
I think you'd expect himself to save it, wouldn't he? That's the thing, I think. I mean, like Stephen said, he, before the goal, he's made a brilliant save. So it's like, you know,
we're back to being spoiled a bit now, aren't we, after what we've had over the last 4 seasons.
Yeah, I mean, we are.
But he is a very good goalkeeper, so I think it's a fair point that he'll probably think he should have saved it. I think, like, we hold him to a higher standard than
Yeah. Resident goalkeeping expert McGilliff's staying very quiet on this debate, I have to say.
No, I think, to be fair, I'm being quiet because I can't really add much more than what Chris and Gareth said. I agree that he'll be disappointed in himself, and I was the same as Chris when I saw it on the ground. I thought, oh, that's an absolute howler. But then when I've seen it back, it's took certainly one, possibly two deflections on the way through. And when you've set yourself to try and get something behind the ball that deviates even slightly, then it's going to knock you off kilter. So for me, it's really frustrating. But it's a mistake, but you'll get over it. And what I do like about Paxton is he doesn't let it faze him. For some goalkeepers, they make an error and they go to pot. But that never seems to be the case with Paxton. He's just quite fearless still, and fully deserves his call up to the England under 21 squad as well, which is good to see.
People make mistakes, don't they? Players make mistakes. So it's just one of those things. Think about the last time in the Championship, and there was one or two mistakes a week from the goalkeepers, and they all had a go at it. So the odd one from a keeper who's learning and can only get better is no bad thing, is it really?
I think the highlight of my entire time supporting Sunderland was Robin Ryder conceding the same goal twice in about 4 minutes against, was it Reading? Millwall, that was it, yeah. The exact same free kick went through him in exactly the same position. So I think, yeah, when we've got that to draw on, it's hard to get too annoyed at a keeper like Patterson, I think.
I was actually sitting for that game with a friend of the pod, David Priest. So that was quite good, wasn't it? Sitting next to like a goalkeeper.
He found a way to defend him.
Probably. I can't remember. I don't think he did, to be fair. I think he just felt sorry for him.
He was very bad.
Yeah. Ryder was the best of the three, I think.
Which is saying, hey, Jason Steele, keeping clean sheets in the Premier League. Get him in your fantasy team, ladies and gents.
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Just before we move on from the game, because I know so much we can say, penalty soft, but I think, you know, had we could have sat and like we could sit and go over Sunderland's like last four or five games where the referees have directly caused us a result, you know, Sheffield United and Coventry straight away winning goals or goals scored by the opposition in a game that we lost by one goal. Shouldn't have been allowed, and there's more than that as well. That said, it was really soft, but I think personally, if that is given in the Premier League, I don't think VAR are overturning it because he's grabbed hold of his hand. Is that fair?
Probably. Yeah, I think so. It was just weird, like the delay in the referee giving it was really strange.
Well, when you look back, though, he's speaking the whole time, so he's clearly talking.
So did the linesman, like, because I didn't think the linesman
He's talking to the linesman, clearly. So he's looking, he didn't know, but he's when you see the footage back, he's making eye contact with the linesman and he's talking, you can see him talking away non-stop. So he's obviously, I'm guessing he's thinking it's a penalty. And right. I guess he's just saying to him something along the lines of, did he put his hand on his arm? Did he put his hand on his arm? And if he said yes, then he's given it, is what I was thinking must have happened.
I think it is really soft, but I do actually agree. I think if it's given, weirdly, if it's not given, it doesn't get overturned, I don't think. But if it is given, it also doesn't get overturned.
That's what I mean. That's the way VAR works. It needs to be It needs to be clear and obvious error, in which I don't think they could see it was, because if you run the risk, if you put your hands on you know, if a centre forward's going past you and you put your hand... And he clenches his fist while he puts his hand on his arm, and he lets go quite quickly. But he's made the action, and it's a risk that.
I was just about to say, I think if we give away that penalty, I would have been more annoyed at the defender than the referee, because you've given the referee a decision to make, and I actually think that ball's going to comfortably run out for a goal kick if he doesn't do that. So as I say, if I was a Luton supporter, I'd be more annoyed with the defender for giving the referee a decision to make rather than the referee for giving the penalty. I mean, it is soft, but as I've said before, there's no such thing in my mind as a moral penalty or not a penalty. It objectively is or it isn't. And for me, it's a violation of a rule, so it's a penalty.
Yeah, anybody else got anything pressing I want to add about the match that happened about a million days ago?
I was just going to say, I thought Mowbray got his substitutions pretty spot on. I think he deserves credit for that, because he changed the shape of the team and really changed the momentum of the game. I mean, like I say, they weren't in great shakes, but to be honest, after they scored, I fully expected them to just go on and see the game out, because I really didn't think we were going to score. I mean, even after the substitute, I really wasn't sure that we were going to score, but he did change the momentum of the game. And I know, certainly when he first came in, I think quite a lot of us were a bit critical of his substitutions, and we've heard that he makes some strange ones, but he got it spot on Saturday.
He did. Well, what we used to do back in the day, we used to like look at this fixtures and I used to get people to like predict something, but we haven't prepared for that. I've just thought of that on the spot. So I'm going to do a really quick one, and you're just going to give me 0, 1, or 2, 3 points each for the games. Then we'll have a little chat while I work it out, and we're going to see where that amount of points would have had Sunderland finished in the previous few years. How about that? So a quick fire game of predicting the season, because we used to have full episodes on this, like an hour and a half on that, but we
because there was something on it.
Well, I know, but you know, it's interesting, isn't it? I'm just interested to see where, you know, in likelihood we subconsciously think Sunderland are going to finish. Why not?
Okay.
Is anybody saying we're not going to lose at Burnley? No. Okay, that was a nice easy one then, wasn't it?
We need Jimmy Ray on for that one.
Yeah. Oh, that's what we should have done. We should. Who's the most negative? And we should have got them on with Jimmy and compared notes to see what the crack was at the end. What about Hull City on the Bank Holiday Monday, Chris?
I think a draw.
Okay, Gareth.
Draw.
Mick.
I'll go and win.
Yes, big lad. Okay, and then we have Cardiff City away, Chris.
Win.
Gareth?
Win.
Mick?
I'm going draw, because I think Cardiff are playing a lot better under the new manager.
Okay. Birmingham at home, Chris? I thought this was the bank. There's two bankers, and I thought this was one of them.
It's because our home form's not great, but yeah, I would say win.
Gareth?
Win.
Mick?
Yeah, win.
Okay, the next one seems like the other banker, although our old friend Neil Warnock might have other suggestions. Chris, Huddersfield at home.
Yeah, that's one of them, because I can see us like it being like 1-1 or like 0-0 or something. Okay. A horrible game. So Gareth?
Win.
Mick?
Yeah, I'm one win as well.
So our form, actually, you know, like Gareth, you've got us picking up 10 points out of a possible 12. So
against those teams.
But I'm just but people are going to be shouting for the playoffs then, aren't they? Yeah, I would imagine if you put that kind of run together.
Because we're about 7 points behind the playoffs.
Well, this is the thing, though. Well, I know, but you're taking 10 out of 12 points. It's not bad. I might put you in contention. But then the final, well, two of the final three games could be where, if that did happen, we put ourselves in contention, then it could start the meltdown. West Brom away, Chris.
We'll get beat.
Yeah. Gareth?
Defeat.
Mick?
Yeah, I think we'll lose.
Okay. Watford at home, Chris?
I think we might get beaten that one, actually.
Okay. Gareth?
Defeat.
Mick?
I'm going to go for a draw.
Okay. And then finally, last game of the season, Chris, is Preston away.
Preston. I think Preston are a weird team out there. I think we might win that one. I think it'll be your classic Nathan Ryan on it, win the game.
Okay. Gareth?
Draw.
Mick?
Draw for me too.
Right, okay. Do you want to maybe read some Twitter questions, Gareth, while I do me maths on this? Because I'm not Chris and I can't just do it.
Do you want to ring me off the call? Do you want to ring?
I'm not Chris and this might take me a few minutes. So what I'm going to do is load up the tables of the previous season. So I think that could have been a lot worse, or couldn't it? Considering like the context. And again, it just reminds of how frustrating it is, because were we in good shape? Like, it was on for us. It really was, wasn't it? It's so annoying. So annoying. I'm filling here, Gareth. Do you need any more time?
Okay, no, I've got. So, firstly, we'll start. Sergeant Scooter Boy has got in touch and said, thanks to all at FDR Clone for sorting out replacement overshirt. And the course is a came with it with a top service. But the main takeaway with that is he said, thanks to Wise Men Say Pod for the discount code.
Yeah. So, you were, yeah. Not, keeping an ear on for that. Big thanks to Fritz Glider, who are sponsoring us for the reaction show now. And that discount code is there, WMS15. Not even 10, 15. Ooh. There you go. Go and have a look at the stuff. I guarantee there'll be something on it that you like. I have numerous items that I did acquire before the sponsored us as well, just to put that out there. So go check that out and I'll do me maths.
Twitter's rubbish now, isn't it? Like, what you can't... Here we go. Nothing's coming up in the replies for tweets and replies. That's terrible. So here we go. We've got a question from Dan Emble. No, we'll go for Daryl Gray first, who says, are we destined to have a French manager in the future? Are we destined to have a French manager in the future? A 19-year-old French manager.
I'm not too sure.
All depends on what the Super Duper data machine tells us.
Yeah, it's boring, wasn't it? Right. Dan Embleton says, have some of our injury problems this season been due to Mowbray and the amount of work he was expecting in games, specifically strikers, plural, that's stretch, and fullbacks. I say this as Blackburn's form fell off a cliff when Brereton Diaz was injured last season.
Is it not more to do with the fact that the squad is primarily comprised of young kids who haven't played a lot of football, and it's a demanding it's a demanding pursuit to ask them to play every game? I mean, like Ross, we've talked about before, but Ross Stewart, okay, he's a little bit older, but Ross Stewart played 49 games last season, played nearly every minute. He was probably due at least one injury. I think pinning it on Mowbray is harsh.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, because I think the difficulty Mowbray's had as well with a lot of the substitutions, he's replacing kind of like inexperience with further inexperience. So yeah. We've got the likes of like Meacham and Barr, who are playing a lot more minutes now, and then we're bringing on Ekwar, who hasn't like kicked the ball competitively before he's come to Sunderland. And I think this is kind of sums up the issue that we've had. I mean, we've got Dan Neil, this is only his second season of full football, when last season he had to come out of the team due to burnout. And in recent weeks, I think he's been showing symptoms of that again. So I think you can blame the manager if they've got all the tools at their disposal and we're still getting all the injuries and we're achieving the results that we've achieved recently. But I don't think it's fair really to blame the manager when, as I say, we haven't got like obvious experience or like better quality to replace these young players with. So I think it's just a little bit of a symptom of the... I think we have been had bad luck with injuries weekly. We've left ourselves short in some key areas too.
Yeah, and on the inexperience point, just sort of never miss an opportunity to chuck a stat in. Joel Gelhardt, when we signed him, he had played fewer professional minutes than we had left in the season, and he was like, he's our only striker. So I think it's kind of hard. I know he hasn't got injured in that yet, but I agree, Mick. I think it would be very harsh to blame that on Mowbray.
I mean, and even before Stewart got injured at Fulham, don't forget how it was a very brief overlap of time where we had both Stewart and Sims available, because Mowbray had only been in the door 2 weeks when Stewart got injured against Middlesbrough. He didn't come back to the Hull City game on the 17th of December, I believe it was, and then Sims went back to Everton on New Year's Eve. So he literally had a grand total of just over about 2 weeks in his whole time as manager, where he's had more than one striker to work with. You know, it's, as I say, it's harsh to blame, I think.
Quick question from Ander Grimm here, who says, what do you feel are the priorities for the summer? This could include recruitment, fan experience, engagement, and infrastructure.
Let's not even go for the obvious position on the pitch, because I think we're all in agreement about that one.
Depends who we sell, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, again, could call us cynical, but I do wonder if they're trying. He talks them up enough in public. Assuming nobody goes in the summer, are we thinking like, is anybody going to go too far away from just maybe a little bit of experience to go down the spine of the side? I mean, that, in my opinion, would have us comfortably in the playoffs, but you can't see the club doing it, can you? It just doesn't look like it's
Yeah, you certainly can't see them spending money on it.
The thing is, like, Mowbray is going to be so, because Mowbray had said earlier in the season when Corey Evans was fit, you know, he made a statement, I'm paraphrasing, saying, you know, I know incoming transfers aren't my call, but if they listen to me, we would have somebody who can do what Corey Evans does, and they didn't do that, and now he's injured, and he's probably not going to make the start of the season as well, is he? So surely he's going to be demanding that, surely.
Yeah. He has to be. I think this question, we could literally do an entire pod on in the summer.
And we probably will.
Yeah. I think for me, yeah, I certainly agree with that. I think as well, it would be nice to see the off-the-field stuff finally start to step up. The narrative has been, we'll get this stuff, the other stuff right first. And I don't know, we'll obviously talk about it in the second half, but it's a bit of a shambles, so... I think, yeah, like, you want to see improvement on the field, you want to see it off the field as well. But I definitely, I think the Evans point, like, everyone was obviously delighted that he signed a new contract. But you're right, Stephen. I mean, I don't think he's going to be back for August. And even if he is, like, that's a really severe injury, especially at his age. So, yeah, they definitely need to fill the gap there.
Another one here. I'll start with Kieran Lawrence's question, who says, how much do you reckon we should be rotating the squad to give some of the lads minutes? And how much do we think he actually will? Obviously, he being Mowbray, would be inclined to say not very much to both questions, given how little time most of the starters have had themselves. But we'll also mention a question sort of simultaneously, which kind of ties in from D, just D, is at DR Safk. On Twitter, should we play the lone players anymore? It kind of ties together.
It's interesting, that one, because I think, like, and I've seen this, and I think it's a fair question, and I think it's a valid question to ask that. It's the age-old argument, isn't it? I think it's not new that a football fan would say, if they got to a stage of the season when you've got nothing to play for, like, let's not maybe develop somebody else's players and develop our own. And I think on a basic level, I think that's true. What I would say in this instance, because of the situation we've got, no centre forwards, et cetera, and down to the bare bones, I would be concerned that if you take our best player out the side, Ahmad, for example, then, you know, you are less likely to win, confidence is less likely to grow, and at the minute, I think we need to try and finish the season as strong as possible to keep that morale up going on in the next season, would be my view on that.
I've got a slightly different take, okay. Maybe not a take, but just a view on it that I want to float on that kind of opinion, which you'll probably see me dragged over the coals, but that's one for the second half.
Oh, so you're not going to tell us now?
You will. Right, for the second, okay. For the second half.
Leaving us in suspense.
Well, what, so we're going to be talking about something else in the second half, and then you're just going to say, I'm going to answer that question.
No, it ties in.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, well, I'll answer it. I agree on Ahmad. And I think on Gelhardt, like, who the hell else are we going to play? Like, I'm not really sure who else we could put in. And I think, really... truthfully, to me, we're not really doing Gelhardt any favours by playing him.
And who's suddenly going to do a better job? I've seen a few people shout for Jack Clark up front. Like, what have you seen? What have you seen that would make you think that that's a better option?
He's one of the best wingers in the division. He is, I would say, of the players we own, he is our best player, certainly our best attacking player. Maybe Ross Stewart. But
him and Ross Stewart are tied, probably, I would say.
Yeah.
Patrick Roberts as well, let's not forget. Oh, Paddy.
See, it's nice to have the choice, isn't it? But yes, I agree. I don't really see the appeal in that. And I just think, really, like, being selfish about it, if it's going to knock someone's confidence, which I think unfortunately it is with Gelhardt, maybe it is better to do that with a lone player than some child in the under 21s who clearly isn't ready anyway.
Mick, any great opinions?
No, I think he's summed it up well there. I think, yeah, we need to get as many points on the board between now and the end of the season. And I think, whilst as a fan base, I think we've maybe said it's unlikely we're going to make the playoffs, there's still an outside chance. So I think until that is, like, kind of mathematically done, I think we need to keep on fielding the strongest side possible. Otherwise, and again, as you said, Stephen, I don't want to be in a scenario where, because I think, like you said, we've won one of our last seven, so I don't want that to translate where we're going at the end of the season and we've won like two in our last 12 or something like that. You know what I'm saying? I want to, as you say, keep a bit of momentum going, because broadly, I think it's been a very positive season, and I want to go into the next season with that same positivity rather than going and saying, yeah, it was a great season, but then after January, we just fell apart.
Okay. Anything else before we move on?
That's the point. That's more on the point that I want to discuss, not about whether we should play loan players or not, by the way.
Okay. Well, we'll come to it then.
Clear.
I'll come to it then. We'll have a break just now because I want to talk about the new share split and season tickets. A few people have asked us about. So we ran a poll on Twitter to see how many of our listeners are renewing for next season. Chris, you have Sunderland finishing on 64 points, as do you, Gareth, and Mick has us finishing on 65 points. Yeah, we're finishing 10th, lads.
Excellent. Oh, the Steve Bruce special.
Although, I think my point stands in that, you know, I think the last three games, we're going to pick up one or three points is what people think, which means if we finish 10th, it means three games in the season. If we were going to go along with that, we might just be in with a shout and people might start to build their hopes up. But I think everybody realistically knows that.
Don't. 10th. Just forget it, Stephen.
I'm just saying. You are the ones who the predicted last... Sunderland to be on the verge of the playoffs with three games remaining.
I said, well, what did I say? I've said this consistently for the second half of the season, that it will not surprise me that if we are 4 or 5 points away from the playoffs with 3 or 4 games to go, because teams who perform like ourselves are always in that position towards the end of the season. But towards the end of the season, 3, 4, 5 points from the playoffs is quite significant. In terms of trying to get in there in the last few games, because there's so many teams usually on a similar amount of points trying to get in. So
the division's going to be fascinating next year, isn't it? Have you seen the League One promotion race?
Yeah,
Barnsley have suddenly dragged themselves into it.
That was a fantastic game last night as well.
The Barnsley-Sheffield, and they won, didn't they? So Plymouth have gone top.
4-2.
And then 4-2. Sheffield Wednesday have games in hand still below second. And then Ipswich have games in hand that would take them to within a point of Plymouth. And then Barnsley have a couple of games in hand, which would take them to a point within Plymouth now. So
yeah, it's not going to be an easy league.
And then whoever's coming down, are we still thinking one of the big guns are going to come down probably from the Premier League?
Leeds, Everton, Southampton.
Yeah. I think Southampton's inevitably going to go, but I think Everton will probably pull clear, but West Ham are in with
West
a shout.
Ham, yeah.
Leeds. This is the thing, isn't it? We've spoke before about picking and choosing.
Thing is, any of them that come down, you kind of fancy them to, especially with like parachute payments, you fancy them to be back up there, don't you? I know Norwich this year have knackered themselves a bit, but
Norwich don't throw the money about, do they? They never have done.
No.
This will be Bournemouth's second sort of relegation promotion kind of up and down if they go down in the space of, 4 or 5 years? And they had 2 seasons in the Championship before getting promoted again, didn't they? So
that's kind of what's starting to happen. You've got like a little glut of clubs who are not good enough for the Prem, too good enough for the Championship.
Yeah. Watford, West Brom.
Yeah. Norwich, like I said. Yeah.
Mm. Anyway.
That used to be us, remember those days?
Well, I mean, kind of. But kind of. I mean, people say that, but we kind of aren't. It's like twice that happened.
Yeah.
In the 15 point in 96-97.
Yeah.
And we went down with 40 points in 96-97.
Probably like a 10-year period between 95 and 2005. Yeah. We were that team, weren't we?
Yeah.
We had four seasons in the Premier League under initially Reid and then Wilkinson. So it wasn't like we went up and down.
Yeah, I guess if you stretch that back to 90 though, we had an up and down, and then maybe 4 seasons in the Championship. So maybe like over that 15-year period, we were very much a yo-yo team. Yeah. Anyway, we'll take a quick break there and we'll come back and we'll speak about more stuff.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Gear up for the match with suitable casual clobber. From overshirts and jackets to polos and tees, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats and more. Fritterskladder is making waves in the pubs and on the terraces. Come join the FDR movement and get 15% off with your discount code WMS. Stand out in the crowd, be indie, search FDR clothing online and on socials. Welcome back to the Wise Men Say podcast. Right, everybody here renewing their season ticket next year. So
I just did it. Forgot about it, to be honest.
I did mine a day as well, actually.
It just renewed automatically. So
yeah,
it's £60 more about the notification.
Well, I haven't had an email. Should I have?
Are you still blacklisted?
Oh yeah, barred. Oh, you
yeah. Yeah, sorry, it's gone to my alias's email. I'll check that.
Yeah, with Creatherspoon.
I'd like to think even they wouldn't have been fooled by that one.
Well,
we got just shy of 1,000 votes on this, which I'm surprised at. Normally, our polls vote more, but maybe not all of our listeners are season ticket holders, so they don't think a question about renewing is for them. So 100% renewing or renewed, we had 85%, so a strong number. Haven't decided yet is a further 9%. Which just leaves 6% to say they aren't renewing. We did ask a few people why not, or why they were thinking about it. We have Roker End Dweller John saying, last season was the first time in 41 years I didn't renew. Picked my games as I'm unconvinced with the owners. Chris paid attention. January window, underline that when they decide what year of the plan they will go for promotion, I will reconsider. Ken Towers, mine auto-renewed last week, didn't know it was due. That tends to be the pattern we're getting. A lot of people saying that they didn't even realise it was renewing and it's done. Alan Anderson, not renewed yet. As I feel more confident and comfortable with the season cards. Had problems in the past. I think they did say they would look at that, didn't they, on a request basis for people who don't have smartphones, etc. John Chapman, I'm not renewing. Price of everything, what it is, coupled with the fact I can't make all the games because of work. My son's losing interest. Sorry to hear that. Ethan, love the lads, regardless of their questionable decisions. It won't get in the middle of it for me. So, yeah, Aaron could end up working abroad. Fed up.
Bloody part-time, this man.
Yeah. Gareth Frank, renewed. Just wish changing seats was made easier. Renewed as always, Alan Davis says. AJJ, Southwest Corner, can't stand up all game. If I sit down, I can't see. Price of beer and cider is ridiculously high. Bus takes forever to get off the bridge. I think the summer will sort you out, AJJ. You've just been a bit of a grump towards the end of the season there. Mike Stubbs just renewed. So lots of people basically, thanks for all your feedback. It's far too many to read out. But there are a few people saying that, well, it is renewed, but they didn't really have a choice because it's done and they weren't made aware of the price hike. Which is interesting. Generally, though, price is okay, I think, still. I don't think we can complain on that front, anybody?
Yeah, I think they're all right. I think it's a comms issue, really, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Like, if you're going to put prices up, and I think we are probably due it. I think there's reasons why it couldn't have been put up in the past. But yeah, I I think it's hard to get too annoyed at the prices themselves, but I think it, you just piss people off when they find out not from you. Like, if you don't, you need to get out in front of that sort of thing, even if it's like an agreeable thing. People are going to be a bit miffed because it then gets them thinking, oh, were they trying to sneak this under the radar? And really, they're just very, very bad on the commercial side of things. But yeah, I think in terms of the prices themselves, certainly for the normal tickets, I think they're all right. I think the Black Cats bar is a weird one.
Yes.
I know there's people who listen to the pod who are quite miffed about that, understandably so. I think like they took the food off her enough and stuff like that, so not really sure what the appeal.
What's the motivating factor of going to Black Cat's bar if you don't get like a meal?
Exactly.
It's not even like a premium seat, like the back of behind the goal, like
with the away fans above you.
They were always just bog standard seats. You didn't pay extra for those before they became the Black Cat's bars, because it used to be the up and north,
yeah,
didn't
it? Yeah, it used to be the up and north. It was like
cushioned seats. The front.
Yeah, that's a weird one. And I think that speaks to probably a bit of a wider worry about how they're not really investing in building the club up on that side of things. But I think in terms of the price and the rest of the ground, I think. Yeah, probably Durian, and I know it's only certain areas of the ground as well, isn't it? Because my father-in-law got in touch today to get me to sort his renewal out and sent me his email, and his price hadn't gone up, which is very upsetting because mine's gone up a lot.
How old is he?
No, it's not. He's 61, so it won't be that. I think he must be, because is it the corners where it hasn't gone up? I'm sure like it's only like so far along that the price have gone up, because his is still $390, which I think is like the lowest. I'm sure he has a decent seat. So yeah, I don't think overall the prices are too bad, but I do think the Black Cat's bar one's a weird one.
I think
mine's $390. I think self-stand, I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, same with
me, and have yours not gone up?
Mine's gone up 60 quid.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think like the prices are bad. Like, I just think that, like we've discussed, I mean, they could probably just be a bit more.
Especially when they've had a couple of meetings recently with like.
What I would say is, you know, when people talk about, so you know when ex club official at whatever level of seniority appears on something, say, or does an interview. So it'll be like, oh, it's a privilege to hear from them, generally is the kind of the initial kind of vibe about it. So they try and cram the questions in, they give the answers, and then after, no matter what they've said, the general response will be people saying, oh, that was transparent and open from X person. That it just because somebody comes and says things out loud does not mean that they are transparent. They're just saying stuff, right? This is a lack of transparency when you put somebody's season ticket price up 60 quid and don't say anything.
Yeah.
It's transparent to send an email saying, hi, just to let you know, the season ticket price for you for this area of the stadium, when your season ticket ought to run used in 2 weeks, is going to go up by this much. If you want to move seats before your seat automatically renews, then get in touch. You need to get in touch with us to let us know you want to move to a cheaper area of the stadium if you can't afford it.
I think Chris made a good point when we were just chatting before, like we started recording, that I think football clubs generally, like Chris was saying, get away with a much lower level of service than you'd expect in almost any other industry, because, you know, like most things in life, we're very quick to kind of like change it. We're prepared to be a customer of something else, but football fans were kind of like lifelong like supporters of these clubs. So I think it is poor, the lack of communication, and because we don't really expect a great level of transparency. We just expect kind of like the bare minimum, and I don't even think we've got that with this. I mean, a basic viewpoint, like if you're going to put somebody's if not in breach of a direct debit guarantee, even, you know what I mean? I know it's like a bit of a trivial point, but it's just little annoyances that add up and that shouldn't be happening.
There's a level of incompetence at the moment that's in place at Sunderland. And I think the thing is, because we've done all right, better than all right, in terms of expectation on the pitch this season, those things tend to get ignored. when you when you're winning and doing well. It generally is when you're losing and not doing well where people get annoyed about every single little minute detail. But I don't think the things, the problem you've got is when people are getting annoyed about things that aren't, I would argue, minute details, and then they get sort of almost shouted down for being like negative or slagging the club off or whatever. It's not, it's just like, you know, if you went to a restaurant and sat down for your meal, ordered, and then the at a menu price, and then they went came back to you after you've ordered and said, oh, by the way, the price has gone up of your meal. What do you do then?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, well, you don't generally do that, do you? Like, it's not, like you say, it's, they've got a captive market and they know, like, across the game, football supporters are loyal to one team and they know that.
It's hard not to think there's been an error. There's been an error somewhere, because it just seems like what we're seeing here is pretty obvious. And I know we've complained about like what seems to be like cuts behind the scenes and the services isn't great a lot of the time, but that this is basic stuff that any business would know. So I can't believe there hasn't been
an error. There's no need. This is a point I'm making, though. There's no need to serve your customers to a level expected when they will keep coming back regardless of what you do.
Yeah.
So even if they lose 2 or 3% of people from their actions, it's, you know, it's, they're not going to be bothered.
It's completely counterproductive as well, isn't it? Because it doesn't really like incentivize you to go and spend more. Like we'll all get our season tickets and that.
You could try, but you probably couldn't.
Well, that's the thing. Exactly, it's nigh on impossible to buy a Sunderland strip, which is just absolutely ridiculous. And that I know they've consistently blamed like stockists and stuff, but it's ridiculous. Like I think it's pretty apparent that the issue was them.
Yeah. You did the deal, so
yeah, exactly. They did the deal, so you can't complain when the deal is just fulfilled to whatever level that they skimped on and agreed with. Like I know at the Renwide Army meeting last season, they made I can't remember who it was. It might have been Dave Rose made a comment where he basically said it's easier to buy a Newcastle United top in Sunderland than it is to buy a Sunderland one. And I don't know that that's any, a year down the line, I don't think it's any different. And it's just completely counterproductive. Like I'll buy my season ticket, but I've got no real incentive or desire to go and spend money on the club. I mean, I know like Matthew put it up on Twitter last week and he's half taking the mic, but like the kind of incentives that they give with the season card, they're just laughable. Like
non-existent.
Yeah, exactly. 10% off, but you've got to go to the store. Like you can get a free drink or whatever it is, but only 45 minutes.
No, it's not a free drink. It's I think it's a pie and a pint or something for £6.50 up to but 45 minutes before kickoff.
Yeah, and it's just
so like you save like a pound or something,
excluding cup games.
But it's just, it's a really like, it feels like a really lazy way to approach it, because if you did incentivize people to pay the money, like they would, like you've got, what's the average gate this season? Something like 38,000. So say, even if, I don't know, say you've got 34,000 home fans really regularly, 35,000, like that's a lot of potential over the top income and stuff that they could be making. And they're just not making any effort on it. Yeah. I think the season card stuff, I remember 2 years ago we got panned for pointing out that them just sending the season cards out in a little envelope with nothing else attached, and on some of the season cards they didn't even have the club badge printed on, and we got panned for saying that was unprofessional. But it's all part of the same story, really. Like it's just a lack of effort.
Yeah, I think what one of my big issues is as a club we seem to do something which is kind of like massively the wrong thing to do, receive a backlash and then amend it based on the backlash, rather than being a bit preemptive about it and like understanding your fan base, understanding like any other business is expected to, understanding your customer base and acting accordingly. So for season ticket, we've done the hard push of, right, it's all going digital. And then when there's been backlash, we've come out and said, well, actually, if you send us an email, we'll be able to do something about it, where there could have been a much more happy medium, I think, could have been pushed out as an alternative. I mean, back in then, at the start of the season, we didn't have a ticket office that was open on a regular basis. You know, this is like kind of levels that like conference teams have ticket offices which are open every day. And it took a massive backlash from supporters for them to do anything about it. And for me, it's a really bad way to run a business. And I think we've all discussed this in the past. Yes, we do like a lot of what's happened at the club over the past year or so, but there's no excuse for the size of club we are to operationally being so poor. So like, I'm not saying that we should be spending like £10 million on a striker every window, but what we have no excuse for is having a bad infrastructure. We should have the best infrastructure in the Championship because we are the biggest club, so we should be acting accordingly. And as I say, it's just kind of shoddy practice after shoddy practice, and eventually it chips away at you. And like you say, we can't, like Chris said before, we're averaging 38,000 this season. For Sunderland in the Championship, that's unprecedented. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and I first started going to games under Mick McCarthy, like we won the league and we averaged less than 30,000. Even under Roy Keane, we averaged 33,000 when we won the league. So we can't take this fantastic support we've had in the past couple of years for granted. We need to make sure that every transaction with the supporters is as good and as transparent as possible. And I think the way we're going, it can only alienate people. I just think it's quite poor.
I do think generally we are, like, as a support base, taken for granted.
Yeah, I agree.
And I would say that that's probably the case. Obviously, not studying every football club and the way that they interact with the supporters, many might argue, well, yeah, we are on different levels. It could be pricing, or some people might be unhappy about certain aspects of things. What I would say, like, for Sunderland, obviously, the community drive that the club has, and often it's played on in marketing and promotional material, isn't fulfilled by them in reality. And I think, I think we've seen this for quite a long time now, under different owners and at different levels. It seems to be a case of, if we can save some money somewhere, we'll do it, and then we'll see how angry people get about it, and then we'll kind of resolve it a little bit to kind of meet. So for example, the ticket office is open, but it is not staffed.
No.
So the person person who works on the front desk or whatever or in the office at Black Cat's House comes through and does the ticket office stuff. It's like a hotel reception or something. You got to ring a bell for somebody to come and help you. Do you know what I mean? It's quite a surreal thing. It's just an odd thing. I don't know.
There's no excuse for it. That's the thing.
No, that's the thing. And as well, like, I mean, going back to like the season ticket pricing, first of all, yeah, they should be telling people. But the fact, like, that we all think the pricing's okay doesn't get away from the fact that they didn't even consult with, like, the supporters group, which, like, surely that is one of the core things that you would talk to a supporters group about. Like, none of us have missed that.
I can't remember reading that. That definitely didn't happen.
So that was in the Red and White Army minutes. They said the prices are going up, and Red and White Army replied saying there hadn't been any consultation with them. And I think Steve Davison replied, well, yeah, but we think it's a fair price. Now, okay, be that as it may, surely, like, if they're not consulting on that, like, it goes back to what you were saying, Gareth. Like, you just feel like the fan base is taken for granted. Because surely that is the single biggest transaction between, like, fan and the club in a money sense. Like, surely that's something that you talk to the supporters group. Because let's be honest, like, if they use the supporters group to get the message out, that would save them money, and it would save them a lot of hassle. But yeah, it does. It goes back to, like, I think this is something that they really need to be careful of. And Mick, actually, that's a really good point about what the attendances used to be like in this division. Now, they're still kind of riding the wave off the back of COVID, when Aussie fans came flocking back for another season of League One football. That a lot of that came partially to do with the takeover, but it was also to do with the fact that we hadn't been able to go to the game for a year.
Yeah,
got promoted, so like the momentum was like, it's upward and or forward rather, and then this season again, they've improved again, but like, it's not guaranteed to last forever. And I think I would hope that they're not banking on this level of support like for 6, 7, 8 years in this league. I'm not seeing
not hovering around mid table. Not hovering around mid table. So I don't. I know I'm aware we've gone on quite a while.
I think we've gone on.
Yeah, we have. we'll just do a quick summary on the share stuff then, Chris. Because
yay.
But you know, look, I mean, at the end of the day, because I've seen a theory go around, and these theories aren't really based on anything, and people are guessing and speculating, and that's fine. It's the nature of football, really. And, you know, it's no more than we do at times, read between the lines and saying, and a lot of people are saying that the lack of investment off the pitch, well, actually on and off the pitch at times, could be due to the fact that Stuart Donald's still sitting there and needs to match the investment, and it won't improve until he goes. So a significant reduction in his shares, which you could be skeptical about and why it's happened or whatever, but on the face of it, that's what we've asked for, and that's what we've got. Again, it's creeping in the right direction, isn't it, if we talk about where we were last year?
I mean this time a year ago he owned a quarter more of the club than he does now, so I think in that respect, I think anything that pushes him back to Oxford or EC or wherever the hell is a positive in that sense. It's just really peculiar. Like, it's just a really odd, like how often these like shares are changing hands and the makeup of it. It's just very odd. I mean, I think like people automatically assumed he was like forcibly kind of diluted down. That doesn't make any, it could be. It we'll probably not really ever find out since clubs register, or the company that owns the clubs registered in the Cayman Islands, but that doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me, because in order for them to do that, the amount that they're putting in has to be at a level that that he doesn't feel he can keep up with. Now, I did say last year when Kirillu Dreyfus took 51%, I did say I thought Stuart Donald was hanging on, and I still think that's true, but I think it's more a case of he's very slowly kind of selling up before it gets to the point where he kind of can't keep up. It's very odd. It's very, very odd way for things to be happening. I think like the whole Satori thing is really strange.
Before you get into Satori, and Donald said that he's done this so he can go and take a more active part in Eastleigh as well. That was a big draw. That was a big factor, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm loath to believe a word that comes out of his mouth, but I don't think that, I think that makes sense, because, I mean, I don't know if people see it, but I think we talked about it actually, Richard Hill has just taken up a directorship down at Eastleigh again, and
a few behind the scenes are going there apparently as well.
Yeah, exactly, there's a few apparently moved on, and it does make sense, so I think he clearly doesn't have the money to kind of make us the club that we should be, sort of thing. But I don't know that he's been forcibly whittled down here. I think it's probably more a case of he's realizing, well, actually, yeah, if I can sell some shares now, I will. And going down to that level, yeah, he keeps his 9% if we go up. How much that'll be worth if we were to go up? I don't know. Who's going to buy 9%? Yeah, and it opens the door for him to go and rock up somewhere else and ruin their football club. But I don't know. It's just really odd. It's really peculiar. And I think the whole, like, sorry, I know I was going to say that before, the whole Satori thing, like, he's very quietly become like, he owns a third of the club now. And we still have no real idea of what his input is, why he's here. Like, let's be honest, he was part of a regime the asset stripped the club to within an inch of its life and didn't do anything about it, or certainly publicly didn't do anything about it. So what's his game? Like, when Kirillu Dreyfus first came in, Satori was kind of booted off the board. Then 2.5 months later, he was back on. I know it's very strange. I do agree in general, anything that reduces Stuart Donald's involvement with us is a good thing. But I just think it's a really peculiar thing. And I don't think that this equals a sudden splurge on in the summer or any of the stuff we've just been talking about. I hope I'm wrong on that, and I hope they do start funding off the field properly, but I don't think this means that.
There's a really weird thing happened, actually, the Red and White Army meeting, a couple of meetings ago, where the question was asked about Sartori's position. It was just a very strange response from the people involved, like the sort of people who were on the panel. It was like, oh, you don't have to worry about Juan Sartori's involvement. It was like a very weird, that was almost like an answer that had been prepared for a reason, and like, we know something that you don't know, but just found it really odd. It was like, well, so nobody's allowed to express a question or concern about this person who was involved.
Yeah, it was quite strange. So it was me that asked that question.
There was a few people asked the question.
And the thing was, because it's like you said, Gareth, it was inconsistent because it spent the entirety of the meeting like throwing the old regime under the bus for every bad thing that the club experienced, saying, oh, well, it used to be terrible, but now it's great because we've got this. So then I asked a question about Sartori. And then, like you said, when I said, oh, okay, so like, what does he actually bring? Again, we got this like vague answers, kind of what we got from the playbook back in 2018-19 about all his contacts in South American football and tapping into like talents here and talents there. But again, we just see absolutely no evidence of this ever coming through. So
it's just a bit odd. The whole thing's a bit odd, but I've kind of given up trying to even think about it because too much. I mean, you know, for me personally, it's just far too much time and energy to think about these people. I mean, whoever it is, to be brutally honest, I think I've got zero time for these people who run football clubs. They gain the Football League in the top two tiers and just ran by people who've got zero common interest with the people who actually go to the games, and they're doing it for their own, you know, for their own selfish purposes, be it vanity, be it money. So, you know, I'm not going to like, so, you know, the fact that fans make deities out of these people with money who own the football clubs, like, you know, put them on a pedestal. It's just, I find it just really, you know, you look at Chelsea fans singing about Abramovich and stuff like that. It's like, are you serious? Like, yeah, I mean, it's just bizarre. It's just bizarre. Just the whole, I find the whole thing now, I'm sick of it. It's just, I think I'm just tired of it. It's just very odd. And it's like, I just haven't got any time. Like, if you're going to buy the club, invest in it. And then, you know, if you get results out of it, then great, and you'll get something and we'll all get something. But I don't want to be like, I don't want to be your mate. You know what I mean? It's like, just wait. The whole thing's just weird.
I think it's particularly odd here.
I'd be open to being your mate if you're listening, just saying. get around in.
Stephen trying to get him to build a bar in his house.
Go for curries on a regular basis.
Yeah,
I think it's just particularly odd here. After what has gone on in recent years, like idolizing the owners of the club, and they haven't really done anything to merit it yet. I mean, look, like, it's been an improvement on the pitch anyway.
I was going to say we can't. I know. You know, we need to remember that as well, where we were. That's 4 years. Yeah. And that's not me trying to like overpraise anybody or anything like that.
Broadly on that point, but, can I just come back to math? We can finish.
Let's have some hope, is all I'm saying.
No, well, what I was going
to
say is,
we're asking for Donald to like leave, and he's suddenly barely got anything. No, it can only be a good thing.
But I'm saying, so you know the point you were making before on the pitch, and it's quite interesting. It's my issue with generally, I don't think there's enough pushback against the overall model or plan or whatever. I think it's too weighted in favour of the people who are pursuing it to the point where it can't be questioned or altered, or we can't
I'm
be
not
adaptable.
Sure it is.
I think on Twitter, I think on social media it is.
No. I don't think.
No,
really
I'm saying the club. I'm saying that this is what the club are doing, and I'm saying nothing to do with social media. Just saying this is what they're very much.
I thought you were talking about opinion.
No, I'm just talking about they're very fixed in there. We're doing this, and this is the way we're doing it, and this is the way it is. I feel as though, like, you know, maybe when you look at like Alex Neil, he probably was the manager that he probably would have pushed back against a bit to get a little bit more, and they probably don't want that. They probably like want someone like Tony Mowbray, who, I'm not saying, like, you know, Chris has described him as a yes man, but he will just go, well, this is my job, I'll do this. Yeah. And that's my role in this whole thing. But my point on your thing about you talking about finishing the season strongly and winning games momentum, I don't want Sunderland to lose games, and I obviously want to win and you know, every game and all that, you know, whatever cliche nonsense you want to attribute to that. But is there an argument to say that if we absolutely tanked in the last 8 games, people might wake up a bit and go, maybe we do need to reevaluate, because people will fan opinion will broadly turn as well. And we know that the club generally do react to fan opinion, which they shouldn't really. They should just stick to what they do, but they seem to see, well, we'll push things as far as we can go, and then as soon as we kind of, there's a straw that breaks the camel's back, at that point we'll do something about it.
Gareth is under the opinion that they should keep season tickets digital. They should shouldn't let people know when there's a price hike in the season.
You
said they should stick to the guns and not change the mind. So
no,
it's a good place to go out that you agree with all of these things.
I didn't say that. What I'm saying is, I was just branching
away from the off the field stuff.
If we, I'm not talking about this is on the field. I'm saying is, I don't think it would be the worst. If we finish season strongly, fine. If we start faltering a bit, maybe it'll make them think,
I think it's frustrating, though, that it you kind of have to wait for the results to turn for it to be acceptable to question things. Like, I mean, look at West Brom. West Brom have, look, they're still not having the season they wanted to have, but their results have picked up an awful lot. Yet they had an absolutely huge protest a couple of weeks ago about what's gone on with their ownership. The protest completely merited, by the way, but I think, like, it's kind of refreshing to see that they've almost done that. They haven't been kind of like, I don't know, like cowed by the fact that results have picked up on the pitch. I think, like, you can have the opinion that what they're doing on the pitch is mostly fine, or some people are fully in on it, but you can also criticize other things. You can ask, like, you shouldn't, like I say, I've mentioned them already, but like, it's not unfair to be asking questions about Juan Satori when he's been here nearly 5 years now, owns a third of the club, and we still know very little about what his motive is, why he allowed the club to get into the state that it did.
Like, well, I mean, you know, just to sort of try and wrap things up, it would be great, I think, if somebody was given access to ask him these sorts of questions, because when they talk about transparency, that would be great. I mean, we're way off protest territory, surely, I will say.
Yeah, I think we are.
I think we're going to be accused of past behaviour, maybe not doing that when we should have done. I'm thinking of like the latter years of the Ellis Short reign, when you know, what happened with Donald Miffin, although we did, you know, the fan statements made a difference and stuff. Transparency and him coming out and speaking would be great. Wouldn't it?
Last year, we found out who actually owned the club by people putting their necks on the line and asking the question. And I just think it would be healthier for a fan base as a whole if we didn't jump down the throats of people who have those concerns. But anyway, at least we're only owned by 9% of Stuart Donaldson, or at least only 9% of
his owned by Stuart Donaldson. And let's, you know, like Gareth said, sometimes I'm just getting to a point where you're just sick of worrying about it all. So let's just take a bit of a leap of faith and hope that that means things are moving along in the right direction. The summer might tell us about that. And if things start to improve off the pitch a bit, as people have predicted, if you know, then that will tell us a lot about that as well. Bit of a bumper episode, that one, wasn't it? We've gone on and on.
Far too long.
But we're not going to be back for a while. So, plenty of time to listen to it. So, okay. Make sure you do your go and get your discount. Fritter Sklada WMS10 on FDR clothing online and on socials. Admin Gareth.
27th of April at the Customs House. Wiseman Say presents 1973 Journey to Glory. Tickets still available. Join us for that. It will be a good evening. If you go to customshouse.co.uk, you can buy tickets online. If you call them, you'll be able to buy tickets over the phone, and you can go in person to their manned box office where there are people who will sell you tickets, and it is open.
Indeed.
So there you go.
Vic Hallam's going to be there. How about
that? Yes. He is indeed.
How about that? Okay, right. We'll be back whenever then. It'll probably be
Matt and somebody will be back to preview the Burnley game. Yeah. Probably in a week or so.
Yes. Indeed. Right. Thanks, everyone, and thanks to you for listening.
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.